sed. Asa adon da palamer ale butet. Da palamer anine gar ale butet.
Here is Voice of Indonesia with the news. Indonesia's top men's doubles pair, Fajar Alfian, Muhammad Rian Ardianto, are preparing for a potential clash against Japan's Takura Hoki and Yugo Kobayashi at the 2025 Badminton World Federation World Championships in Paris. Fajar and Rian led the head-to-head record 2-1, including their victory at 2024 Kumamoto Masters Final. The 2024 World Championships have been running since August the 25th and will continue until August 31st, with Indonesia fielding 12 representatives, including singles hopeful Gregoria Mariska Tunjung. The second Southeast Asian Deaf Games opened in Jakarta on August 21st, with athletes from across region competing until August the 26th. Malaysia dominated athletics with 5 gold medals, while host Indonesia earned 2 medals, including silver from Raka Helmi Prisena. Indonesia's men's futsal team also led the standing after victories over Thailand and Malaysia. Listener, that was the news from Voice of Indonesia. From Indonesia to the world.
Berlagu mambo caca, hatinya takkan senang, duduknya tak tenang, dengar bunyi gendang ingin serta berlenggak.
Hai Nulela, dengarkan kalipso dengan bongo, ingin menari sajo, menari badubo, siapa yang suko.
Nulela memang cantik, siapa kenali rehat tiba di centri. Sopan sapa tegurnya, manis senyumannya itu yang menggoda.
Aduh kalau berdendang, lagu dendang sayang rasaku di awan. Joget tari Melayu, Nulela pun senang mengayunkan ku tari serampang.
Hey! Oh hai Nulela, kalau dengar gitar kling 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 klang.
Tari apa tak pantang, Nulela menantang. Apa suka mambo, kalipso dan cha-cha-cha. Hai Nulela.
Hai Nulela.
Thank you.
aduh lela, dengarkan kalipso dengan bongo. Ingin menari saja, menari berdua, siapa yang suka,
yeah. Nur lela memang cantik, siapa kenali reh, hati badi jempre. Sopan sapa tegurnya, manis senyumannya, itu yang menggoda.
Aduh kalau berdendang, lagu dendang sayang, rasaku di awan. Joget tari melayu, Nur lela pun senang, mengayunkan putar serang.
Gitar kling plang plong plang plong plang plang.
Aduh kalau berdendang, lagu dendang sayang, rasaku di awan.
Tari apa tak pantas,
Nur lela menantang.
Apa suka mambo kalipso dan caca-caca.
Hai Nur lela,
aneh buat gue.
Voice of Indonesia, the overseas service of Radio Republic Indonesia, broadcast in 9 language services: English, French, German, Dutch, Spanish, Arabic, Mandarin, Japanese, and Indonesian. Voice of Indonesia is broadcast by shortwave 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz and via streaming on voanews.id and RRI Digital on mobile application. We present various programs for you: Diplomatic Forum, The Session, Indonesian Wonder, Miscellany, Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia, Indonesian Pop and Regional Songs, International Musical Entertainment, as well as news and information about Indonesia and abroad. Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world. That is Isyana Saraswati with Pesta or Party. Who doesn't like partying? Older people, of course. But I believe that a lot of people are still having a lot of energies to party in Indonesia. And the form of parties in the country, I mean in Indonesia, is so diverse, from the one at the clubs and also the ones in a festival. And there is another nice stuff coming from Indonesia, namely the Tangsi Festival in Sawah Lunto, which is set to currently captivating not only the local but also international visitors by showcasing the rich history of the Ombilin coal mine alongside with the city's unique intangible cultural heritage. As part of the We Are Site Managers International Symposium 2025 held from August 23rd until the 28th. And to know the full story, we are with Aldila from Bukit Tinggi. Good morning, Aldila.
Good morning, Steve.
How is it now? How is it this morning in Bukit Tinggi? It's so bright over there.
Yeah, so bright and so clear. You can see from the far.
Yes, yeah, I can see the mountain behind you.
Yeah, the Marapi Mountain behind me. Well, Steve, I have the information about the Tangsi Festival in Sawah Lunto. The festival is a part of the We Are Site Manager International Symposium 2025, and which is run from August 23rd to 28th. And the festival features a range of activities that celebrate the history of the Almiling coal mining, as well as promote the region's intangible cultural heritage. And the festival, the Tangsi Festival, invites forum participants and the public to explore the rich history of the Almiling mine, one of Indonesia's oldest and most historic coal mining site. In addition, the festival includes cultural exhibitions, a community festival, and also Songket Carnival, showcasing the local cultural wealth of Sawah Lunto. And the festival also features a local traditional foods, which form an important part of Sawah Lunto's cultural heritage, such as asam-asam ale.
Okay, why is it asam-asam ale?
Asam-asam ale is look like serabi, mm-hmm, or traditional pancake, yeah, but without coconut meal. To make it, we only use the putu, putu flour, mm-hmm, and also coconut water and palm sugar.
Okay, so a lot of things coming from coconut, right? Hello.
Yes.
There. Yeah. And about the Tangsi Festival, is it an annual festival or only part of the We Are Site Managers, like one thing only?
That's an annual festival.
Okay, that's an annual festival, and I'd like to. But what?
It's part of the symposium. Part of the symposium agenda.
Okay. And actually, also, do a lot of people often come to the Tangsi Festival? I mean, it can be put into our calendar for next year, right?
Yes, I hope so. And the uniqueness from the Tangsi Festival, so many traditional cultures, mm-hmm, perform there. And for example, the opening is from Batak traditions.
Wait. This is from West Sumatra. Why do you showcase something from North Sumatra?
Because Sawah Lunto has many multicultural. One of the part in West Sumatra with many ethnics.
Okay, so we cannot only say the big cities. We cannot claim only in Jakarta, in Surabaya, in Medan, but also at those small cities, Indonesia still so diverse to the bone. Okay, thank you very much, Aldila, for joining us. I wish that you will not spend too much time under that sign light. You can get a headache. Okay, thank you very much, Aldila. Have a nice day.
Okay, have a nice day, Steve.
And listener, that is Aldila from West Sumatra, more precisely in Bukit Tinggi, telling us about the Tangsi Festival, in which they will showcase a lot of culture, not only the local ones, but they are also from the people who also live in the region. And more from the Voice of Indonesia is ready for you. So stay tuned on RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Ribuan hari aku menunggumu, jutaan lagu tercipta untukmu. Apakah kau akan terus begini? Masih adakah celah di hatimu yang masih bisa kutuk singgahi? Cobalah aku kapan engkau mau. Tahukah rumah yang yang kau suka, maka kesejukan yang kau rasa. Coba keluar di terik siang, ingatlah bintang yang kau sapa, maka kehangatan yang kau rasa. Itu aku.
In a moment, you'll be listening to an interview with Andre Noto Hamejoyo, the Assistant Deputy for Disaster Risk Reduction for Coordinating Ministry for Human Development and Cultural Affairs, hosted by Gray. So stay tuned on Editorial Service Voice of Indonesia.
Of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Well, listener, Indonesia is one of the most disaster-prone countries in the world. Earthquakes, floods, and landslides often threatens the life of the communities. In the context, safe and disaster-resilient housing is not only essential as a place to live, but also as a vital shield to protect families. But how does the government view the importance of disaster-resilient housing for the people? What efforts are being made to promote the construction of strong, safe, and affordable homes? And what are the standards for disaster-resilient building, and how can these be effectively communicated to the public? And to discuss this further, we are joined by Pak Andre Noto Hamejoyo, Assistant Deputy for Disaster Risk Reduction at the Coordinating Ministry for Human Development and Cultural Affairs. How are you, Pak?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Good afternoon for all of the Voice of Indonesia listener.
Okay. So, Pak, without any further ado, I would like to ask you about how Indonesia is a disaster-prone country, as we know. How does the government view the importance of disaster-resilient housing, especially for the communities?
Yes, thank you for this opportunity. Indonesia, as a disaster-prone country, has the potentials for the disaster risk, and we should prepare for all of the disaster risks in Indonesia. We view the disaster resilience housing as the crucial for saving lives, reducing poverty, property limits, supporting sustainable development, and accelerating for the post-disaster recovery. And the government supports this through special planning policies in disaster-prone areas, implementing for the Indonesian National Standard Construction Standards, and further providing development incentives, public awareness campaigns, and building and providing sturdy and safe permanent housing, including for the innovations such as the land banks. And why it is important for the government? The first is the life safety. We should prepare for the building's disaster resilience housing as the key preventive measure to minimize loss of life during disasters such as earthquakes. And the second is reducing property damage, minimizing physical damage to buildings and property, which indirectly reduces repair and recovery costs. And the third, supporting sustainable development. How to build disaster resilient housing aligns with the concept of sustainable development, which is more resilience to the impacts of disasters. And the third, fourth is the accelerating post-disaster recovery. Communities with stronger housing tends to recover more quickly after disasters. And of course, for the actions and policies, how the regulation standards, how about the incentives, educations and campaigns. This is related to the programs, how to build for the disaster risk resilience for the all of the people in Indonesia, and how to conduct education awareness campaigns to inform the public about the importance of disaster resistance houses, and how to they can participate in government programs. And of course, for the permanent housing development, and also the land innovation and management.
Okay, so how is the government encouraging the development of public resilient housing among the public itself?
Yeah, the government encourages for the development of disaster resistance housing through various policies and programs, such as the providing financial incentives for subsidies or low interest loans, establishing strict construction regulations and standards, providing technical assistance, of course, yeah, and training, and campaigns to raise public awareness of the importance of disaster-resistant housings. Because, you know, now we still face for the lack of the disaster risk, and we should raise the public awareness of importance of the disaster-resistant housings. In addition, the government maps disaster-prone areas should be understood by all the peoples. Then implements for the land bank concept for land allocations, and collaborates with various stakeholders such as business and banks to accelerate post-disaster housing development. And we should define for the policies and regulations for the construction standard, disaster hazards maps, and land banks. And of course for the financial incentives and technical supports and education and training. And it is about the professional educations for the implementing for the education and training programs for the engineers or the contractors or the architects on the latest techniques and material in earthquake resistance constructions, for the awareness campaigns, of course, how to conducting public education campaigns to raise awareness awareness for the importance of disaster resistance housing and how to participate in government programs. And of course, the collaboration and participations, multi-stakeholder participations, how to gathering the participation from various parties such as the local government, the private sectors, how to support post-disaster housing reconstructions, and of course for the role of community organizations, such as for the encouraging community to collaborate with the regional disaster management agencies such as BDBD in disaster preparedness activities, including funding and implementations. Of course, we should talking about the sustainable approach, of course. Thank you.
Okay. So the next question is, I would like to ask, how is the government promoting public awareness and education on the importance of disaster resilient housing? Because that is actually one of the most interesting thing to know, especially for the citizens around Indonesia.
Yeah. The government promotes awareness of disaster resilience housing through community-based initiatives, educational partnerships, of course, recent communications, public awareness campaigns, and integrating risk-based planning into national strategies, often supported by the organizations, of course, from the regulations such as the National Disaster Management Agency, or BNPB. It is how we the integrated risk-based planning into national strategies. And the key strategies include sharing information of disaster risk, developing community-specific preparedness plans, training local disaster management teams, and encouraging participation in simulations. It should divide it into, first, how to the risk-based planning and knowledge sharing. It is very important for us, disseminating risk information. The governance thrives to ensure communities understand the specific disaster risks they face, such as earthquakes or floods, mostly from the hydrometeorologic disasters, enabling the people to take appropriate safety measures. The next is to integrating resilience into national plans. National strategies incorporate resilience planning, which involves developing institutional capacity and using funds to support disaster risk reduction and management. And the second steps is the community engagement and capacity building. Yeah, we know that the disaster resilient village programs from the initiative such as disaster resilience village programs in Indonesia, and to build resilience at the village level, and how to improve preparedness and response capabilities, and participatory approach, of course, for the involving communities in developing and implementing their own preparedness and recovery plans, fosters greater commitments and builds cultures of resilience. And next is the training and education. These programs contents for the trained community members and local volunteers, such as those in the Indonesia, Tagana, Tagana programs in Indonesia under the social ministry, how to become disaster preparedness and response for all of the stakeholders. And we should strengthening for the partnerships and educational materials, of course, but how the government partners with educational institutions to integrate disaster risk reduction education into the school curriculum and create relevant educational materials for the youth mobilizations, of course, engaging youth groups and maybe in the peer educations. to help disseminate awareness and preparedness message to a wider audience. For the public awareness campaign and community, of course, how to launch for the national campaign to raise awareness about disaster risk and promote safety measures, and how to promote housing specific measures. Public awareness campaigns inform residents about housing specific safety measures, such as structural considerations for building in earthquake prone areas. We know the examples from the disasters, the earthquake disasters in the West Java, we should learn about that. The public awareness campaign should strengthening. The people must understand about how to build back better in after the earthquake. We see in the West Java. Yeah, and it is very important. We see the example in Cianjur. You know, Cianjur in 2022 and 2023, it is the most challenges how to raise awareness about disaster risk and promote safety measures, and how public awareness is very important about housing specific safety measures.
Okay, so what are the, for the final question I would like to ask you, what are the standards for disaster resilient housing, and is there standards attainable for the public in terms of affordability and practicality? Because that is the key points on when citizens buy a house, between the affordability and also the practicality of it, of the house price itself.
Yeah, for the housing standards, must focus on the engineering principles to resist specific hazards like earthquakes, floods, and storms, often involving stronger materials, specific construction techniques, and safety systems. Essentials achieving these standards for the public depends on the local building codes and regulations. Safety systems for the regulations. For communities, affordability and practically require balancing this high standards with economic feasibility through policy, accessible financial aid, and the use of locally appropriate and cost-effective materials. For the example, standards for disaster resilient housings, such as the structural integrity, how to design building to withstand seismic activities such as earthquakes, for the high winds or storms, and other specific hazards by using appropriate materials and construction techniques. We should strengthening for the designing building to withstand seismic activity, and the building codes adherence to local or national building codes that are incorporate disaster resistance requirements tailored to the specific risk of a given region. And the next is hazard specific design, all incorporating features like flood resistance foundations, fire resistance materials, or reinforced roofing and walls, and how to make sure the safe systems, how to ensuring the essential building systems are designed to form functions or are easily restored after a disaster event. It is important things for the standard for disaster resilient housings. And of course, we should consider about the cost, yeah, how to implementing this advanced standards can increase construction costs. When it is a major barrier for affordability, so we should how to the affordability solutions such as the financial aid and subsidies, local capacity, affordable materials, practically construction considerations.
Okay, thank you so much, Pak Andre, for your time and answers for all of the citizens and people of Indonesia on finding the best and the most practical housing, especially for Indonesia. And thank you so much for your listener for accompanying me in this special interview. And stay tuned with us for more amazing interviews like this only on Voice of Indonesia, where you can tune in through our online streaming, voinews.id, shortwave in 3325 kHz, 4755 kHz, and our application on RRI Digital. Stay tuned with us always in Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Hari ini, esok, lusa, dan selamanya hanya ada kau di hati. Kau buatku serasa hidup dalam mimpi. Meski terjaga, tak ada setitik ragu. Hadir mengajakku pindah ke lain hati. Bersamamu hingga bumi tak bermentari, padamu ku berjanji. Oh, semerbak kasih kita mewangi selamanya. Harum abadi lestari asmara. Coba pindah ke lain hari. Bersamamu hingga bumi tak bermentari, padamu ku berjanji. Oh, semerbak kasih kita mewangi selamanya. Ku berjanji kan tetap setia.
Voice of Indonesia.
My name is Valerie Reyes. I come from the Philippines. It's a different type of invention found in Indonesia. And yeah, I heard it was originally claimed by Malaysia, but then it was found out that it was originally from Indonesia. And then I think it was announced by UNESCO just, I think, 2 years ago. It was recent.
That was the atmosphere in an Angklung musical training followed by participants of the Indonesian Arts and Culture Scholarship Program at Saung Angklung Ujo, West Java. Angklung is a bamboo musical instrument typical of West Java. And as was expressed by Valerie, a participant from the Philippines, the musical instrument is originated from Indonesia's cultural wisdoms, which has been declared by UNESCO as World Cultural Heritage. However, though born of local wisdom, no one can explain when angklung was first created. A lecturer at the Indonesian Karawitan Art College, Yon Sutiono, said,
"Kalau yang namanya musik bambu itu, kalau kita yang kenal sekarang ya seperti angklung. Kalau di Jawa Barat memang yang lebih ini itu yang jenisnya angklung ya, alatnya digetar ya, bukan tidak tergolong alat perkusi atau dipukul ya. Nah, itulah barangkali memang ya kapan mulai dibuat ya saya sendiri enggak tahu itu kapan ya.
Karena the bamboo music that we know today is angklung. It is known in West Java. The instrument is played by shaking or striking it and not by beating or tapping it like percussion. When it was first made it, I do not know. What is clear is that we could find it when there were traditional rituals or ceremonies. For example, in Bogor there was angklung gubrak and in Banten angklung seret. It was all media for traditional ceremonies, which in essence was for tasakuran or thanksgiving to the Lord, or even a repellent of bad spirits. Now, however, it is not to ward off bad spirits anymore, but to repel pests.
Formerly, angklung was used as part of ritual among the people. Then, as time went on, angklung became a folk entertainment. How could this happen? Daeng Oktaviani Ujo, an angklung artist from Saung Angklung Ujo, has an explanation.
Awalnya nggak ada nadanya, Pak. Bukan selendro pelo. Awalnya itu angklung itu hanya musik ritmis. Jeringjung, 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 jeringjung. Itu dipergunakan untuk.
Initially there was no tone, no selendro nor pelo. Originally angklung was just rhythmic music. Jeng gon jreng gon jreng. It was used by Badui tribe as tribute to the goddess Dewi Sri during the harvest. Don jreng don jreng don jreng, so there was no tune. But then the outside Baduis created Dami Lalati Dachuns, who they used as a means to beg. Then Mr. Daeng Sutigna was interested in it. He was a teacher, a music teacher, and a scout instructor. Mr. Daeng tried to find out how could this musical instrument be taught in schools. When he saw the beggar, he thought this could be translated into Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Si, Do. Then he tried to do it and offered to teach this in school. He was rejected. Why? Because at that time, only rich people could go to school, and they did not want to play beggar music. Finally, he decided to teach it to Boy Scouts. When they played angklung so beautifully, the schools then became interested. At last, angklung went to school. So the one who translated the traditional tunes into Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Si, Do is Mr. Daeng. Why did he do that? Because at that time, schools were in need of musical instruments. That's the main reason. Then, when it became interesting, angklung then was turned into music for entertainment.
Erik, very nice. It's the second time. We went here last year and it was last year, it was so nice. We want to see it again. So, take a time, it was very nice.
Perfect. I've been here for the seventh time and I've been seven times here. When it's not nice, I don't come back.
Those were the comments of two foreign tourists after watching the show at Saung Angklung Ujo. They were amazed with the music because angklung has a special attraction, as expressed by Daeng Oktaviani Ujo.
Angklung ini merupakan suatu senjata yang sangat luar biasa. Ya, kita harus tahu, dan saya menyadari setelah saya keluar negeri ratusan kali, itu saya menyadari bahwa kita ini punya senjata yang sangat luar biasa. Dulu kita dalam sejarah, Belanda kocar kacir.
Angklung is an incredible weapon. Yes, we should know that. I realized after I had been abroad hundreds of times. Once in history, the Dutch colonial troops were terrorized by sharp bamboo spears. Not because they were more deadly than grenades or bullets, no. But the spirit of these bamboo spears made the people came and work together, helping each other to fight the Dutch. That made the Dutch troops scared. Angklung, as you can see, has made everybody swept away. Everyone was involved and resulted in harmony. So when I visit other countries, a lot of people feel close to Indonesia, how they feel in harmony with Indonesia.
The harmony and familiar feeling with Indonesia have been well perceived by participants of the Indonesian Arts and Culture Scholarship 2012, Heydar from Azerbaijan and George from Nauru. Thanks to the scholarship, they have been given the opportunity to learn the art and culture of Indonesia, especially angklung music at Saung Angklung Ujo, Bandung. Initially, when they first saw the angklung music performance, they were so amazed. How could some pieces of bamboo produce such beautiful music, which ultimately has made them feel familiar and love Indonesia?
Nama saya Heydar. Saya berasal dari Azerbaijan. Ya, suka. Saya semakin suka Indonesia. Ini ani.
My name is Heydar. I come from Azerbaijan. Yes, I love it. I'm getting more and more in love with Indonesia. This is extraordinary for me since this is the first time I see a musical instrument made of bamboo. It is very unique and I really want to learn angklung. In my opinion, angklung is not difficult if you really want to learn. I think I can. Yes, I can play angklung.
My name is George Kwajine. I'm from Nauru. Well, the first time I didn't know about bamboo can make music from it. But now I can, like, you know, realize that bamboo can make of many of things, like can build house, making music and everything. But the first I was like so surprised that they make music from this bamboo, like angklung. Yeah, I also like, yeah, maybe this is the first time I can pass the music class. Yeah, very easy. Back home, I have to, like, if I want to teach angklung, maybe I need to buy this equipment to go back to Nauru and teach them how to play angklung. Because in Nauru, we don't have bamboo, we don't have much bamboo.
And more people are interested in learning angklung music, including foreigners. This is a logical consequence, especially after UNESCO designated angklung as masterpiece of oral and intangible heritage of humanity. But there is also concern about this typical music of West Java, as perceived by the angklung master Daeng Oktaviani Ujo.
Tapi yang saya lebih khawatir adalah, saya khawatir angklung ini bisa orang lain lebih bagus memainkan. Kenapa? Ketika saya mainkan lagu China, ya.
But I'm more worried that other people would play angklung better. Why? When I played a song from China, Chinese people were surprised. It sounds better in angklung. When last week we were in Korea, we played Korean songs. Wow, they sound really nice with angklung. When I was in Cuba, we gave them some angklung. There is a music school in Cuba. Cuba is a closed state, but they play angklung beautifully. They have tango and salsa patterns. So my concern is, angklung can be played at anywhere, by any country. You can imagine the Nigerian can play angklung. The Arabs can as well play in the desert. The Chinese, the Japanese, it can be played anywhere. That's what I'm worried about. More people can play it better. They are more serious. Well, how about if we are not serious?
Same concern is also shared by the head of tourism and culture of West Java province, Nunung Sobari. He even worried that angklung recognition as World Cultural Heritage would be revoked by UNESCO.
Jadi betul sekali, di sisi lain kita bangga, gembira dengan pengakuan itu, tetapi itu kan juga ada syaratnya. Jadi angklung itu dievaluasi ya oleh UNESCO. Kalau nanti evaluasi.
So it is true, on one side we are proud, happy with the recognition, but there are some conditions. So angklung is to be evaluated by UNESCO. If the result is negative, then the recognition will be revoked. The negative criteria are as follows. First, if angklung is mass-produced, manufactured. Second, if according to the assessment of UNESCO, activities related to angklung have dropped or even none at all.
Facing these concerns, the government of West Java province has made some efforts to preserve angklung, as stated by the head of tourism and culture of West Java province.
Nah, untuk apa ya, mengantisipasi supaya
in order to keep angklung alive and growing in West Java in particular, and in Indonesia in general, the government has initiated a Love Angklung movement. A more strategic effort actually is to make angklung-related activities in schools. So angklung now has become an extracurricular activity. Schools in Bandung now have sent their students for angklung lessons. Some headmasters have even invited professional angklung instructors to train the students and to form angklung ensembles.
The government's seriousness in maintaining, developing, and utilizing the unique art of West Java is also evidenced by the opening of a new study program in the Indonesian Art College, namely Angklung and Bamboo Music Studies Program, as revealed by a lecturer of Karawitan, Indonesian traditional music, who has also been appointed head of the program, Yon Sutiono.
Kemudian pemerintah juga dengan membuka salah satu prodi bambu yang.
Then the government has also opened a bamboo music studies program at STSI. Yes, perhaps this is also another effort. There are courses leading to bamboo music, and now there are also scholarships.
Head of Tourism and Culture of West Java Province, however, says that all the efforts that have been taken by the government will not run well if it does not get support from other parties.
Karena menurut saya dalam pelestarian.
Because I think the conservation, development, and utilization of the art and culture must be done simultaneously. I conclude as choir, symphony, you know, one sound singing a song usually is not so good, but it would be so nice if the song is sung in choir together. I mean, those components are not just the government. The first is the government, the second are artists or cultural figures, the third are associations or groups, including schools.
Support for preserving angklung would be created if all are aware that angklung is fun, as perceived by the artist angklung Daeng Oktaviani Ujo.
Yo nyadar gitu angklung itu menyenangkan.
Let's create angklung awareness. Angklung is fun, not a kind of heavy music. It can be played by anyone. Well, why don't we try it? No problem if you don't like it. It is impossible to make everybody like it. So, just try and taste it. After that, let's package it. And I want a lot of people to try and listen first. So do not always make a remark about what angklung is like before feeling it first. So open your mind. Well, it turned out that angklung is like this.
Ini bukan lagu cinta biasa. Hanya denting nada yang memanjakan senyumanmu. Ingin ku cerita semua rahasia yang hanya Tuhan dan kamu yang tahu. Kau buatku lemah tak berdaya. Ha, 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 ha. Oh, kau membebaskanku dan ha, 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 bersamamu. Aku tahu kau suka padaku. Kau memeluk aku, terasa nyaman kau bersama aku. Oh, oh. Aku pun inginkan kamu. Oh, oh. Semua ini memang tidak biasa. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Apa yang ku rasa padamu memang istimewa. Selidiki aku apa adanya. Ayo kita bongkar mujizat dunia. Kau membuat hati terkila-kila. Hatiku tergila-gila. Aku tahu kau suka padaku. Karena erat kau memeluk aku. Terasa nyaman kau bersama aku. Oh, aku pun inginkan kamu. Kau buatku tertawa dan bersamamu. Kau membebaskanku dan bersamamu. Aku tahu kau suka padaku. Karena erat kau memeluk aku. Kau suka padaku. Oh, oh. Erat kau memeluk aku. Oh, oh, oh. Rasa nyaman kau memeluk aku. Aku inginkan.
Listener, today's Music Corner presents a traditional song from Jambi Province.